DW Africa Link.
In classrooms across Cameroon, silence often speaks louder than words. Girls miss school, confidence fades, dreams are quietly put on hold, all because of a natural biological process that's still wrapped in stigma and silence: menstruation. From unaffordable sanitary products to inadequate school facilities, menstrual hygiene is more than a health issue. It's a barrier to education, dignity, and equality. So how do we break the silence, challenge the norms, and build a system that doesn't force girls to choose between managing their periods and pursuing their future? That's what's coming up. Stay tuned. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
Menstrual hygiene is still a major issue all over Africa. Many adolescent girls struggle to stay in school due to lack of proper menstrual hygiene practices and materials and stigmatization triggered by cultural beliefs. According to UNESCO, 1 in 10 girls in sub-Saharan Africa doesn't attend schools during their menstruation period, corresponding to 20% of school time lost in a year. Cameroon is one of the countries still struggling to make some progress. There are several projects ongoing by international charity organizations to support thousands of girls get access to menstrual hygiene materials parts of Cameroon. So how is Cameroon hoping to give hope to many schoolgirls struggling with menstrual hygiene? Well, to discuss more on this, we have Bright Masanga, a young female student, and Clotilda Adiensawa. She is the CEO of the Center for Advocacy in Gender Equality and Action for Development, a gender activist in Cameroon. Now, let me start with you, Clotilda. If you can just tell us why menstrual hygiene is still a major issue in Cameroon.
Menstrual hygiene remains a very fundamental challenge and issue in Africa, in Cameroon, and especially in the Northwest and Southwest region, which has been plagued by the conflict for the past 8 to 9 years. This is because originally there are lots of issues of stigmatization and issues of taboo, and this has been exacerbated with the presence of the crisis. And the issues of taboo and stigmatization actually stem from the lack of limited knowledge on the biology of menstruation. And because many cultures and traditions have already placed these assumptions and beliefs around menstruation, it makes it a very difficult topic to be discussed. And because it's not easily discussed amongst families and amongst children, even in school, it continuously increases the issues of stigma. And so making the menstruators, young women and young girls who are menstruating, to have lots of challenges on properly managing this menstruation. So the issues will range from issues of culture and the issues of limited knowledge, issues of lack of adequate material, as well as no advocacy for this effective implementation of programs that can support proper menstrual hygiene management within the schools and communities.
Now, still with you, Clotilda, you just mentioned also lack of awareness, even in schools. And I'm just trying to think, as a young woman myself, not young, but as a woman myself, I remember when I started my menstrual periods, and that time was almost like going into secondary school. But we've seen that cycle has changed now. Girls actually go on their periods a little earlier. So I'm just wondering, should these lessons not be started now in primary schools rather than starting in secondary school?
I see it too. I think if I were in that position where such decisions are made, I will emphasize and work to see that this education actually starts in the primary school. Because just like any other education, there are lots of things that we learn that we only come to start experiencing them at a later age. And I think that menstrual hygiene or menstruation itself should be started. When we have children and they start talking, they can express themselves, they can look at their parts of their bodies. It is important to start educating them on their systems and what they are expecting. And then when they get to upper classes of the primary school, as they are approaching adolescence, it is even very paramount. It's more important, imperative that they are given this education. This will go a long way to reduce the shock. Many young girls actually get into shock when they start menstruating for the first time. And with the change of, I don't know, is the climate or change of times or what, maybe you and I started menstruating when we were already in secondary school, like at the age of 14. But many young girls now start at the age of 9. And this is an age where many of them are still in the primary school. So actually starting to talk about menstruation in the primary school is the right thing to do right now.
At least today we have a young female student, Bright Masanga. Bright, if you can just tell me, do you recall the moment when you first got your period? Like, what was going through your mind?
I remember getting my first period like it was yesterday. Initially, I was in the parlor, that's with my younger sister, and she was the one who pointed out this thing. She was like, "Oh, Bright, what's that on your dress? That's a red stain." So I was shocked, like, this is blood, but do I have a wound? That was the first thing that came to my mind. But I couldn't feel any pain, so I began pondering, what could be wrong? Why am I bleeding? What's going on? So immediately I rushed to my mom. After telling my sister, just brushing it off as ink, I just told her I'd stain myself with red ink while playing with a pen. So I ran to my mom and I was, instead of panic, I was confused. I was telling her I'm bleeding, but I'm not feeling the pain. So it was actually somewhat tragic. She then introduced menstruation to me. She told me that it's the monthly flow of blood. I will experience it every month. She gave me a pad, taught me how to use it, told me I needed to maintain cleanliness. I'm now mature. She even mentioned that if a boy touches me now, I'll get pregnant and stuff like that. So I was really scared on that day.
How old were you then, Bright, when this happened? I'm just trying to understand your reaction when you realized this and what was happening. And also, you are lucky because you had your mom around you there to rush to. But I'm also just wondering, had you not heard about this at all at school? Giving also the reason why I'm asking, how old were you then?
At that time, I was 11 years old and happened to be informed. So that's secondary school already. So I'd passively heard about menstruation, not actually being taught about it per se, but I just knew this is something that will happen to a girl, it will come. But I never knew when, why, or even how.
Okay. So now when your mom told you all these things and you started practicing, you know, there's something you also mentioned that your mom said, if a guy touches you, then you fall pregnant. That was exactly the same thing my mom told me that time. I remember Clotilda, that my mom actually said, even if a guy just like touches on your shoulder, you fall pregnant. And then I understand why. It was just trying to tell you that stay away from boys and whatever. But then that fear also comes into you for the rest of your life, until later when you realize, no, I think mom was just saying this so that, of course, you need to stop playing with guys. But now I just to find out how these issues are also preventing girls from going to school, Clotilda, and what role a lack of menstrual hygiene products or materials play in all of these.
You see, menstrual hygiene management challenges play a very big role on the education of the girl child. Just as Marcella actually said, she was lucky that she started menstruating while she was at home. There are several stories of young girls who have been embarrassed in class when they just get up to maybe to respond to a question, and that the boys behind or other people realize that she has this big stamp, red stamp on her dress, and then they make a mockery. There are girls that have gone with nicknames on this issue. And this exactly now is where the challenges start coming in. Just imagine if you were a girl and this happened to you, would you want to go to school again? You will not feel comfortable going to school the next time it's going to happen, because first of all, you don't know when it's going to happen. And then when it happens, you don't know what to do. So the challenges are really many. The first one is because they have limited knowledge on the biology of menstruation. Many don't know when it will happen. They don't know how to take care of themselves when it happens. And they don't even have the right material to use. And then talking about school, the problem now is about the infrastructure. How many schools do have the right infrastructure? We are just talking about ordinary water to wash their hands when they change. We're talking about where they have to dispose of their used part. We're even talking about the privacy, where to go in and safely change before coming back. And as well as if they're having menstrual cramps, do they have something like a painkiller or an analgesic just to get it and be able to sit in class? You see, all these things actually do affect young girls. And therefore, when we talk of equal opportunities to go to school, we actually realize that in Cameroon, girls have been given the opportunity to go to school, and many of them are actually going to school as boys. But when we start narrowing down to specific issues that may promote their stay in or out of school, we realize that menstrual hygiene management plays a very big part. And so because of lack of adequate knowledge, because of lack of material, lack of infrastructure, and even lack of simple analgesics, many young girls stay out of school. And a study carried out by UN Women in Cameroon actually showed that average of 4 days every month out of school because of menstrual hygiene management related challenges. And so if you want to put this into perspective, you count 4 days per month for, let's say, 10 regular school going months, you are going to see that girls lose classes for over 30 something days every year. And you will not be able to compare them with boys, because you see, boys end up having lots of opportunities to stay in class regularly than the girls. And in a way, this ends up affecting their educational performance. It affects their dignity. It affects their the way they carry themselves in school, their results and everything.
Right. Now, get back to you, Bright. When you then started your period, yes, you were at home, but then also you had to go back to school. What challenges did you face at school when you were trying to manage your period? I know sometimes you go on your period, you're wearing a pad. I don't know what you used, but yeah, a pad can be so uncomfortable. And also, were there any moments when you felt ashamed or afraid to talk about menstruation?
Actually, there were a lot of challenges I faced, especially going back to school during that period. Menstruation was something so new to me, and it also came very unexpectedly. I could not predict when it would come, and I could not even be prepared before time. So going to school, I was always uneasy in class. I'll check myself. I'll just feel so restless when I'm around people. My participation in class greatly reduced, because then I'll be like, what if I'm on my period and I'll state myself without even knowing? I cannot get up to answer a question. So I became more reserved, as I can say. I became more reserved in school. And actually, there were a lot of moments where I felt like menstruation is not something I could discuss with my peers. It's not something I could just share on. Because even in school, the girls were afraid of being jeered at. We were afraid of being jeered at because a lot of our classmates who maybe had stained themselves had gone through situations where they were laughed at, pointed fingers at, and even given nicknames, as Madame Clotilda earlier mentioned. So menstruation was somewhat some sort of a taboo topic amongst us, even amongst girls, even amongst my peers. So it was not really, it was just very private.
Mm-hmm. But let's talk about now, at which stage in Cameroon do girls start learning about menstruation and its hygiene? Is it in biology class? And at what stage exactly? What form is that? How old, at what age are the girls when they start learning about this?
Mostly, we learn about menstruation in biology classes. And I would say, ideally, that's in about form four, where girls are about the ages of 14. And if seen, this is when we are taught about such topics in biology, but not really detailedly. It's just a topic under reproduction, so they just treat it.
So that's like around form three, form two?
Form four.
And Clotilda, hearing that in this day and age, that's way too late
yeah.
for girls to start learning about this. Now let's talk about the solutions. What are groups like yours doing to fix the problem?
So what we are doing to fix the problem is, first of all, understand that we are trying to demystify conceptions around menstruation. I want to cue up a bit from where Marcella ended with the class, I want to say that menstruation is actually taught or mentioned along, or maybe at the end of primary school or early secondary school, but it's not like very orderly arranged in the school curriculum. You have this topic in reproduction, in biology. The topic is reproduction, and it's usually actually taught only in Form 5. Form 5 is the last class of the secondary school, and that is that because that particular topic is part of the GCE syllabus, and it's mostly taught by men. And they're not, it's taught just from the, like, prepare them to answer questions for the final exams. And the men who teach this menstruation, they're usually very shy to even talk about it. They themselves stigmatize the whole thing during the process of teaching it. And what groups like us are doing is that we are carrying out sensitization both in the community and within schools. So like the project we worked on with eBase Africa, where Maxella is actually a peer educator, was actually a project that we after the finding by UN Women on the number of days that students were missing, that young girls were missing, and also on another study that talked about the situation in schools that could make girls not to stay in school, like looking at the various toilets that existed, finding out whether the school had any internal program that was addressing issues of menstrual hygiene management. They saw the need for this work to be done. And so to make it very comprehensive, I think eBase Africa, in collaboration with the Ministry of Secondary Education, actually chose a number of schools to carry out this intervention. So it was like a study and at the same time an implementation. So they selected a number of schools and for the intervention to take place, and another set of schools where no intervention would take place, so that they can be able to compare the results at the end. So for the Northwest region, we actually worked with 15 schools. In the first phase, we worked with 5. And among these 5, we had 2 primary schools. Then the 3 were secondary schools. But in the second phase, we worked just with 10 secondary schools. It was so interesting because the objective of this project was actually to increase the educational attainment of girls through proper menstrual hygiene management, best practices in schools and communities in the selected regions in the Northwest region. This project gave us the opportunity to address menstrual hygiene management in under four different pillars. The first one was to increase the awareness, just to increase knowledge, like talking about the biology of menstruation, letting every young girl, even both the boys, the girls, and then the teachers, to come to understand what menstruation is all about. And then also talking about what they need to do in terms of what kind of material they need to use, that is increasing access to menstrual hygiene management material, and then looking at the infrastructure in schools. So we in as much as we organize clubs where, for example, Marcella is a club coordinator, we train teachers, we give them the manual to collaborate with young peer educators like Marcella and run the clubs in their various schools. And then we also work with the immediate communities where the schools are based, so that the information that is coming from the school clubs should collaborate with the ones that we are sensitizing the community on, because you understand that handling menstrual hygiene management has to come both from the home and the school, so that the notions that we are giving the students in school should not be different from the ones that the parents are having in their communities. So we do a lot of work within the schools, and we also do a lot of work within the communities. Mostly in the communities, it's about awareness creation, it's about sensitization, it's about talking to parents how to handle their children, it's talking to parents to provide the basic menstrual hygiene management products that they need, and also to adapt their toilets and disposal methods.
Impressive, Cliff Clotilde. Now, Bright, as we wrap up our discussion, what would you wish schools and communities would do differently to support girls experiencing their first periods? And if you could speak directly to young girls, not just in Cameroon, young girls listening to us right now who will soon experience their first period, what advice would you give them?
Communities and schools who wish to aid us, aid those experiencing menstruation, aid those who are still so but will experience menstruation in promoting their educational attainment I would encourage the creation of more clubs, more menstrual hygiene management clubs, more safe spaces, more menstrual hygiene friendly toilets in such schools, and equally out call on even an in-depth into the curriculum such that even menstruation treated under reproduction should not just be treated with an examination-oriented mindset, but should be treated such that it gives girls who are menstruating dignity, it gives them the importance, it tells us why we menstruate, it tells us the importance of menstruating, and it uplifts us from thinking that menstruation is a burden. And also to young girls who are still to experience their first period, these words are for you. I'll start by telling you that your first period has a special title to it. It has a special name. It's called the menarche. And menstruation is not something of a burden. When you see your first period, it's a new chapter. It's a beginning of maturity. It's a beginning of growth. It's a sign of the ability to reproduce. It's a sign of productivity. Don't feel burdened. Don't feel ashamed. Ensure you reach out to your guardian for help and explain to them what you're going through. Equally, ensure you remain healthy. Ensure you follow up. It's your body. It's you. Don't detest menstruation. Don't feel inferior. It should be a pride. It should be something you should be proud of. And I've specially written a poem for this as a club coordinator. The title of my poem is Menstrual Hygiene, an endeavor towards dignity, an effort against infirmity. We once were full of ignorance, but today menstrual hygiene has restored our pride. So we should say no to stigma, no to shame, no to pain, for we are period proud. Thank you.
Bright Masanga, thank you so much for such powerful words. A female student in Cameroon, and also Clotilda Adienza, CEO of the Center for Advocacy in Gender Equality and Action for Development, a gender activist as well in Cameroon. Many thanks for joining us.
Africa is changing. Don't get left behind. Tune in to Africa Link.
At the Africa Link podcast, we always look across the continent to see how the stories we are dealing with play out or at times even overlap. In Kenya, talking about periods and menstrual hygiene is still considered a taboo, and it's something that Fairuz Adan, a female entrepreneur, has been working to change. After studying and starting a career in healthcare provision in the UK, Adan returned to Kenya to raise awareness and provide better access to sanitary products for women and girls who can't afford them. She tells DW why this means a lot to her.
Why For the Love of Girls? It all started halfway through 2019. It was a lot to do with cost of menstrual products. Even as university students living abroad, it was very expensive to buy menstrual products. And also the environmental impact that single-use products have on the environment. When my sister and I first decided that this was what we were gonna do, I was too scared to tell anybody. I didn't want people telling me, no, don't do it. Oh, people are gonna say, how are you talking about periods? My sister broke the news first to my parents. I gave it to her. After that, it was a lot of support very quickly, especially because in the Somali community, people do not talk about periods. It's a conversation that was not unfamiliar to people in my family. The only thing was my grandmother thinking, oh my goodness, people are going to see my grandchildren walking around talking about pads, or oh my goodness, you talk to your dad about these things, how does he just say, yes, this is a pad, and talk about the benefits of reusables. So there's a lot of cultural things that were funny, because at the end of the day, like, those comments were not said out of don't do it. There was still a lot of encouragement, but it was the cultural side, hearing what other people are going to say. The problem that we're trying to solve is cumulative impact that lack of period products has on a girl's life. It begins with you not being able to have pads, or being shamed for maybe having a stain in class, that you won't go to school month on month when you're on your period.
Now that's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, are a crucial part of our community, and your engagement can shape the direction of our discussions. We value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. Remember, you can find all of the Africa Link podcast episodes on Spotify and Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts from. This episode was co-produced and edited by Isaac Kelechi. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Thanks for listening. Until the next one, it's bye for now.
DW News.
Here are today's news top stories and why they matter. Mozambican police have been accused by Amnesty International of being involved in the deaths of nearly 400 people during a 3-month post-election crackdown. The killings followed disputed elections last October and widespread protests led by opposition figure Venancio Mondlane. Political tensions in the gas-rich Southern African nation have since calmed down after a surprise meeting between Mondlane and President Daniel Chapo. So what are the key highlights of the Amnesty report? Well, the police and the army reportedly used excessive force, including live rounds and indiscriminate shootings against peaceful protesters, injuring over 3,000 people, the youngest only 9 years old. A man live streaming police action was allegedly shot dead. Internet access was throttled during the protest. At least 10 opposition officials have been killed since the vote. And now what next? While tensions have eased, Amnesty International is calling for impartial investigations and legal reforms to ensure security forces uphold human rights. The government did not immediately respond to a request for comment on the Amnesty report. Meanwhile, Uganda's parliament is set to debate a bill that could reinstate military trials for civilians. This comes just 3 months after the Supreme Court unanimously declared the practice unconstitutional. The move has sparked fears of deepening authoritarianism, with critics warning it could be used to silence political opposition. So for context, here's DW's Frank Higa with what you need to know.
The legislation is contained in the Uganda People's Defense Forces Amendment Bill 2025. It seeks to allow civilians accused of gun-related crimes to be tried in military courts. It follows closed-door meetings between President Museveni and ruling party MPs who hold a parliamentary majority. Opposition leaders argue that the bill violates the constitution and accuse the government of bribing MPs to support it. Prominent opposition figures like Dr. Kizza Besigye and Haji Obedi Lutale, currently facing treason charges, are at the center of the political storm, with critics warning the law could target them. So, what next? The bill's passage would reverse a landmark Supreme Court ruling and could further erode public trust in Uganda's democratic institutions.
Executive wants to have an arm of the judiciary through the army, and that's the overreach that they create through the military courts, having power to try civilians. It violates the constitution. It violates all principles of rule of law, because the executive becomes the investigator, the prosecutor, the judge, and the jury. And that's, you know, that's a miscarriage of justice.
Thanks, Frank, for that. And finally, China has appointed a new trade envoy as the world's second largest economy pushes back against US President Donald Trump's swinging tariffs on import that sent global market tumbling. Li Shengang has assumed the role of representative for international trade negotiations and vice minister of commerce. Li, who is 58, previously served as Beijing's ambassador to the World Trade Organization and deputy permanent representative to the United Nations in Geneva, Switzerland. Why does this matter? This appointment signals a more assertive, possibly strategic response to renewed US tariff pressure under Donald Trump. With trade tensions escalating and tariffs on Chinese goods soaring 145%, Beijing is reinforcing its negotiating team just as global economic stability hangs in the balance. And what's next? Li's deep legal and diplomatic background could shape the next phase of China-US trade relations. And all this comes as China says its economy grew by 5.4% year-on-year in the first quarter, beating expectations, even as US officials warned that US tariffs were exerting certain pressures. And that's all we have time for today. Are you interested in constructive analysis of news happenings? Just hit the subscribe button, like, and comment on the stories we highlight. DW Africa is the channel's name, and I'm Chinaza Samuel.
for mind.